Thursday, April 5th, 2018. That's right, you heard me, Thursday. Yes, it's a special kind of pre-record version of Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, Trump sucks and so do you. Still. Non-stop turmoil in the Trump regime. Frankly, folks, it's the same old, right? Create chaos, create distraction. Meanwhile, rip apart things that, I don't know, we hold in common. Trump's most influential alt-right Twitter troll, Ricky Vaughn, was doxxed by Peter Dalen, the white nationalist running against Paul Ryan. Yep. The layers of Dante's hell were all activated for this one, folks. Vaughn is a frat boy from Millbury, Vermont, who lives in Brooklyn. And that, if you see the picture of this guy, yeah, that's about right. MIT Media Lab actually named Vaughn to its list of top 150 influencers on the election. And, you know, people have been looking to try to figure out who this guy was for a while, and it just kind of, like, opened up this week. So that was big. More close to home here in Pennsylvania. Yes, I got to update you on the Colleen Bradley case. Hope you saw the video release of the part one of the interview, Colleen Bradley whistleblower. Released that yesterday. We'll talk about that whistleblower case. We had rallies for tuition-free higher education at Westchester University of Pennsylvania. PA Student Power was in the house, and they will be active along with the faculty unions from across the state, that's ABSCUF, to advocate for the PA Promise, that is tuition-free higher education. Now, the PA Promise is kind of tuition-free. It's kind of close to that New York model where it's tuition-free for some. PA Student Power like to see universal free college for all. We'll see more of these rallies across the state in the coming days. And we got Turning Point USA. If you've been listening to Out the Coop podcast or paying even half attention to anything that Sean has said over the past couple of years, you'll know who Turning Point USA is. Nice right-wing, dark money group that is, you know, infiltrating colleges and buying off elections for student government, that kind of fun stuff. Well, we've been told that Turning Point is having what they're calling at least a 5,000-plus person, like, turnout, a national speaking event at IUP on Monday, April 9th. And the PA Student Power has called for a statewide day of action for every campus to denounce and deny school funding for hate groups. Let's not forget Charlie Kirk, you know, the guy at the pinpoint of the point of Turning Point. We'll be speaking at the PA Leadership Conference. You know, that's the crazy circus that comes to Carlisle every... Carlisle, right, Sean?
Camp Hill.
Camp Hill. I forgive. Camp Hill. Carlisle. Camp Hill.
The White Shore.
I just insulted everybody. Whatever. Sponsors included Senator Soprano himself. I mean, Scott Wagner. Commonwealth Foundation. Citizens Alliance of PA. Fun stuff. Students and faculty rally to oust the Edinburgh University president. I don't know if you saw this story, folks, but it was something. The Fairness Center sets up shop one floor above Scott Wagner's campaign office. Coincidence? And Christina Hartman. You remember Christina Hartman, that hard-working, nose-to-the-ground politician? Well, she drops out of the race for the PA-10. Push-poll targets. I hope people saw this. Push-poll targets Greg Edwards and Susan Wild in the PA 7th, but forgot conveniently to mention John Morganelli. Who's behind this little shenanigans, eh? I hope you saw Sean's piece on this, man. It's been going nuts. And we got to watch out for the House State Government Committee to vote on PA Supreme's impeachment resolutions coming up. The crazy doesn't stop here in Pennsylvania, folks. Speaking of crazy, I forgot to put this in the show notes, but I just got the Southern Poverty Law Center annual kind of hate report. And Pennsylvania tops, we're number one, folks. Pennsylvania tops the list nationally of militia alt-right groups in the nation. Right? Put that in your pipe and smoke it, rest of the country. And in segment three, our last call. It'll be a short one. We'll just kind of catch up on some stuff. I'll give a shout out to some of my friends and some folks up there in Syracuse, New York at Middle Ages Brewery. And to the great folks at Marcy Discount Beverages. And Sean will give us the latest of what's happening in the, you know, Harrisburg area. So, Sean, man, here we are, man. We're back in the thick of it. What do you say?
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has. And you know what? You know what we should do then? We should remind everybody that they should become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Don't you think? It'd be a good idea.
That might help.
Well, if you like what you hear at Out the Coop Podcast or like what you're reading at Raging Chicken Press, why don't you support Pull No Punches Progressive Media? Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, no problem. You can make a one-time donation by going to ragingchickenpress.org. Click on the support and membership tab, click donate, and you're good to go. And I'm telling you right now, if you see the reporting that Sean has been doing, we got some new writers that we showcased earlier on this month. And man, just some of the interviewing I'm doing around this Colleen Bradley's case, man, this looks like it is going to be very in short order, moving into the documentary level. Of kind of filming and assembly. So, man, we need your support now more than ever. So become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. And I want to remind everybody, don't forget to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. That is on Free Speech. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune into the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. So, yeah, Sean, a couple of weeks, man. I can't even get the intro right.
Yeah, I could tell.
Oh my
it's
god,
a little rusty.
I am a little rusty. I'm telling you. Plus, it's a Thursday night. My clock is all off. We've had snow days. We've had like snowstorms to launch us into April. We got more snow coming this week, and then it's going to be 70 degrees by the end of next week. I mean,
yeah, I cannot wait for spring to be here.
Yeah, like what's up with that?
It's almost here.
Something. I got this feeling. I got a bad feeling we're going to go straight to summer. So, but we'll see.
We're going to have a couple of 90-degree heat waves in the middle of April and May.
Yeah, that's I'm telling you, I'm feeling it. Right at the end of April, we're going to get that whole the polar vortex is going to kind of retreat and draw up all that kind of like, you know, equatorial air, and then we're just going to be basking in heat.
Swamped
humidity.
And
yep. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yes.
But I am always the happy person in the room, so.
I could tell.
So, man, I mean, I don't know really, Sean, I said this, you know, we talked about a little bit before the show today, but, you know, frankly, you could go through the litany of things that happened since we were here last. And I should say, I apologize about last week, folks. I was going away for Easter and I just dropped the ball and couldn't get something together in enough time. So I'm sorry that I didn't give you a heads up that we weren't going to have a show last week.
But you just fell asleep. It's okay.
I did. I mean, I actually did. I actually crashed and just fell right asleep. Sean was like, listen, yeah, okay, I can do this tonight instead of tomorrow. Are you going to fall asleep again? Oh man, I'm sorry.
I woke up literally like 10 minutes before we start recording. I made a big steak and a baked potato, and I went into like a food coma for like an hour and a half. I'm still like feeling it.
Yeah.
So I eat like a bunch of like chocolate pretzels from Easter. It's just to like get the sugar spiking.
There you go. I'm just yeah. No, but I mean, seriously, since the last couple of weeks, just what's happened at the national level, both in terms of the Mueller investigation, in terms of, you know, like additional resignation, just a story.
Firings of
what's that?
Shunklin. The firing of Shuklin or whatever his name is, the VA person.
Yeah, we got that. We got Scott Pruitt is now kind of looks like he's on the chopping block. We got, you know, new revelations just kind of broke earlier on today from about Manafort basically carrying out a kind of like a black ops campaign, quote unquote. You know, they're putting that quote black ops media campaign in support of Ukraine to up the election. First prosecutions in the Mueller investigation. Actually, someone's actually going to jail. You know, the Dutch dude, whatever his name is, Vander, whatever his name is. But, I mean, so much has happened, but you know, I'm almost at the point where I'm like, yep, this is kind of where we're at. I mean, and trying to keep my eye on just the kind of the organizing stuff because it's been exhausting.
Yeah. And, you know, Trump's been, you know, told that he doesn't need to operate with the chief of staff. He doesn't need to have a communications person. I mean, we're really starting to watch him consolidate power in a way that's completely unprecedented. I had a time to listen to Madeleine Albright's interview on NPR this week with
Terry Gross.
Terry Gross, the main person.
Fresh air.
Madeleine Albright did not know the difference between socialism and fascism by calling Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez a fascist. You know, one of the things that threw me off, but she's actually hit the nail on the head, but saying that what he's doing, he's the biggest threat undermining American democracy, and we're watching that slowly unravel right in front of us with this. You know, and she had a really good point by saying, you know, you just don't watch fascism happen in a day.
Right.
You know, her family had to escape Poland and had to escape, communism and fascism over in Czechoslovakia. And basically said this stuff doesn't happen overnight. You start watching these things happen over a course of time. And then finally it's right down your doorstep. And happy days are upon us.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, just take, for example,
also some of the things you're seeing, how Trump praised Duterte, the Philippines president, and now for killing drug dealers, and now you have the Department of Justice making moves to put marijuana wholesalers and other drug dealers, trying to give them the death penalty. You know, it looks like they're trying to do the same stuff here.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen the stuff? I mean, just in other lines of craziness about the immigrant caravan coming our way, Sean. Did you see that stuff today?
No, I did not.
So apparently, there's like a group of refugees from Honduras that are kind of like in some the caravan is the word that they're saying all over the place, right? Apparently headed towards our border, the caravan of migrants are coming. So Trump wants to activate National Guard members in the states across the country, right, to actually send like military personnel to the border. To guard until the wall is built, we're going to activate our National Guard to police the border and militarize our borders with Mexico. It's been nuts. And this is just today, right? That all the first he had to walk back. He said, well, I know that, because at first he said, we're going to send the military. But of course, that's illegal. Right. So then now he's encouraging, let's say, no, we're actually going to get states to activate the National Guard in order to do this. And, you know, of course, Arizona's all behind it. And so, this is the kind of the world we is. You know, look at it. What are the steps to kind of reinforce what you just said about Madeleine Albright? What are the steps that kind of lead us down that road to fascism? And this is kind of one of them. You see the militarization and the normalization of a militarized society.
Yeah. And also like the way we're using we're scapegoating. Marginal communities to carry out this stuff.
There you go.
It's scary.
It is scary. So I don't know. So, folks, best I can say is just go to whatever news feed that you use and just keep on clicking refresh if you want to know what's going on, because I'm telling you, it's by the minute right now. I can barely wrap my head around it. And frankly, to be honest with you, I had to take a couple days just because of, all this work I've been doing on this this Colleen Bradley case. I just had to take a break from the other stuff because I just can't – just too much headspace for this past week. But it's been nuts. In the kind of national news that I like to hear, right? We've got this guy, this little Ricky Vaughn, right? The little Ricky Vaughn, Sean.
Yeah, the main Twitter troll that is responsible, for pretty much like distributing more news and having more influence than NBC News, The Judge Report, and Stephen Colbert. He was doxxed this week in this website called Gab, which was built by white supremacists, this social media platform that you got to pay a subscription for. He was doxxed in Gab by one of the own white Peter Nalen, who's running for Congress against Paul Ryan, primarying him. And this wasn't the first time Nalen decided to dox someone on this website. And, this is actually someone that Ricky Vaughn has been someone that they've been trying to figure out who it's been for a while. And Huffington Post figured out, found out who the person was. They did a profile on him. and basically wrote a piece saying that, you know, you're the people who basically the argument they made on Twitter that I saw caught my attention. The people who are carrying out Trump's bullshit, white nationalism and all, aren't like your toothless, mouth breathing hicks that people like to, you know, characterize or portray or stereotype in the media. No, it's these clean cut middle class, upper middle class, you know, frat boys that that have got engaged in the alt-right. Basically, they documented that it started out by people getting involved with the Paul, the Ron Paul revolution back in 2008. That was their gateway drug. Then it got into involved with the Gamergate, going after the female, you know, gamer journalists. And then, you know, misogyny moved into that moved them trajectory into the alt-right. That pipeline brought them into the modern white nationalist movement. And they're a bunch of upper middle class, clean cut, clean shaven prep kids.
Yep.
You know, you're frat bros. And you see this happening here. You're going to be seeing this happening next week at IUP. You look at the people who run these turning point groups. They're your frat boys who are doing this, who yep. are carrying out your, who are pretty much your brown shirts in today's society.
Exactly. And this is exactly one of the reasons why, you know, the way that the media has responded to the Trump phenomenon, to the rise again of the, you know, overt white supremacist
I see that here all the time.
As you see the way the media has been responding to all this stuff is that they go, into the most rural counties across the country, to try to suit out these people. And yet, these are the folks, right, especially when you're talking about social media platforms that are propagating this stuff.
Yeah, and they're spreading propaganda, they're spreading fake news, they're getting involved with the Pizzagate stuff. And again, that was something else Madeline and I already talked about. But, you know, you also, out here, I see it out here in central Pennsylvania, you know, the people who are the biggest diehard Trump supporters are your type of frat boy, mid-20s, 30-year-old guys living on the West Shore in the wealthy, affluent suburbs of Harrisburg.
There you go, man.
Like, these are the white nationalists that you see out here. If not them, they're the diehard Trump supporters that don't give a shit about anything that's going on in the media.
There you go. So remember that one, folks. Ricky Vaughn is really Douglas Mackey.
And he's his dad is a lobbyist, you know, for a telecom up in Waterbury, Vermont. And he moved to New York City, working in Manhattan, you know, doing financial work. And then he lives in Brooklyn. So he's someone's neighbor.
He's someone neighbor. Exactly. I do have to say one of my favorite things about the Huffington Post article was the fact that a lot of the pictures they had of him were from his now deactivated couch surfing account, which is just – that was fun by itself.
Yes. I'm sure he's going to be walking around looking over his shoulder in the next few weeks out in Brooklyn.
Yep. Your neighbor, folks. He's your neighbor.
Someone's neighbor.
He's someone's neighbor. Yeah, exactly. So there we have it. So we're going to keep our first segment kind of short today because we got a load of stuff to talk about when it comes to the on the PA front. But anything else you had a national news, Sean, that you want to just kind of throw in for the day?
No.
Yeah.
Nothing I could think of. There's a lot of state stuff on my mind.
Yeah. You and me both. All right. So we're going to come back right after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to remind you to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/RC Press and become a member today for as little as $5 a month. And I'm telling you, folks, we need your support now more than ever. I think Sean and I and a whole lot of us doing this work are kind of burning the candle on like four ends at this point, trying to keep up. And especially as things start heating up for the 2018 election, it's going to become all the more important that we've got the people on the ground and that we can support them. Right. And when I say we, I mean all of us, not just me, not just here, Raging Chicken Press, but the progressive community is actually going to get behind these people, people like Sean Kitchen, right, who are out there breaking this news on the ground, people like Anthony Downing, one of our newest writers who's kind of come on and been covering stuff in the Greg Edwards campaign. We want to be able to support these things. The progressive community should be coming out and supporting these folks by becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press for a little $5 a month. Remember, once again, patreon.com/rcpress. Become a member today. We will be back right after this quick break, and we're going to a load of stuff to talk about right here in PA. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that the United Mine Workers of America called for a strike against the Pittston Coal Company. Negotiation with the miners who worked in Virginia, West Virginia, and Kentucky had dragged on for 14 months. The company had canceled health care for retired miners, along with miners with disabilities and widows, and also was not paying previously agreed to payments into a retiree benefit fund. 2,000 miners walked out of the mines and onto the picket lines. The company brought in replacement workers. The union was committed to peaceful protest, but the strike also drew a large number of other miners to the cause who supported the strike in wildcat actions. As many as 40,000 wildcat miners walked the lines in support of the strike. Angered over the use of scab labor, some of these picketers participated in actions like using jack rocks, a line of nails welded together to puncture the tires of company vehicles. In all, 4,000 people were arrested during the strike. The strike stretched on from days to weeks to months. At the time of the strike, current AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka was president of the United Mine Workers. When a newspaper reporter asked him how long the workers could hold out on the strike, he responded, "One day longer than Pittston." Many friends from labor came to Appalachia to support the strike, including famed farm labor activist Cesar Chavez. A nearby campground became known as Camp Solidarity as a base for these friends. Women supporters formed a group called the Daughters of Mother Jones and staged support actions, including a 36-hour sit-in at the Pittston Coal headquarters. The strike ended in February of 1990, with the miners winning some, but not all, of their demands.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Well, if the national kind of scene is not crazy enough for you, well, we've got enough to fill your entire load of baskets with crazy and kind of news that has been breaking nonstop. And Sean has been like a machine this week covering some of these things. So, Sean, man, kind of where do you want to start?
Let's start with the impeachment resolutions that might get voted on next week.
Start with crazy. Let's do it.
Let's go right into the crazy. So basically a couple weeks ago, the Republicans said that these impeachment resolutions were not going to come up to a vote, blah, blah, blah. They weren't going to make it out of committee. But Dush had an interesting quote.
I think it's pronounced douche. You keep on mispronouncing. It's douche, Sean. Douche.
Yeah, douche. Sorry, Dush. Douche. He had a quote in the Huffington Post with Sam Levine basically saying that I was promised these votes in committee and on the floor by, Terzai and Metcalf, while Leader Reid is out there saying this stuff's not going to happen. So one of the things that's happening on Tuesday, House State Government meeting's having two meetings. One is at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? And the second meeting has been scheduled for the call of the chair. Now, these resolutions aren't on the schedule for the second meeting at the call of the chair, but this is something that where these can mysteriously pop up. Metcalf has done this once before with Martina White's bills, in Sanctuary City bills. He's brought these up out of nowhere to have a vote on them. And this might be something where Tuesday, the second meeting at the call of the chair, might be the impeachment resolutions. So
what exactly before you go there, can you just explain a little bit what call of the chair is so people who are not familiar with it understand?
So pretty much over the past couple of years, Republicans, instead of like having set, these committee meetings at a certain time, usually they'll have them at the call of the chair. It's a way to prevent people from showing up and protesting these hearings. They pretty much do as a way. It's a very if you want to get controversial legislation through sometimes or a majority of the time in committee, they'll use these call of the chairs where the House gavels in the session, for about 10 minutes. Then they'll gavel out, go to caucus, and then it gets called up the chair around like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. And this is a way to do that to get people off balance and to really try to sneak this one through.
And it basically means, right, that the chair, when the chair decides, will call this, will go call this to the floor.
Yeah, no, he'll call the meeting. He'll call the committee meeting. Yeah, he'll call the state government committee meeting. You can do it at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a waiting game, and he has a couple bills scheduled. He does not have the House resolutions up. If they are going to do it, it's not definite, but if they are going to do it, it's going to be Tuesday. So keep an eye out for that.
There you have it. Here we go. This is the their last attempt. You know, one of the things that I think has been pretty clear is that this right now is 100% political move to try to keep this issue front and center, to distract everybody from the issues at hand, to try to muddy the waters around the redistricting plan, and just to make an issue out of nothing at this point, because the U.S. Supreme Court has shot it down twice now.
Yes.
So there you go. That starts off the fun, watching kind of the antics happening inside inside the state capitol this week. Now, Scott Wagner's also kind of made it to the pages of Raging Chicken, thanks to Sean Kitchen. Scott Wagner, he has some interesting things happening in his buildings, but I've also seen some random pictures you've been posting of some nice white vans too. So he's been all over the place this week.
Yes. Wagner has a new set of neighbors upstairs. Wagner's office is located at 500 North 3rd Street. It is the State Street building, it's called, the State Street office building. It's a huge sky rise right across the street from the Capitol. A couple Saturdays ago, someone on the street contacted me. Can't say who, but I got contacted by someone. Basically, they saw a bunch of people walking, office chairs, desks, computer monitors, computers, filing cabinets, you name it, any type of office equipment, moving them by hand out of the Manufacturer Association building, which is 225 State Street, across the street, over the median, into the State Street office building, like a army of ants, pretty much. It was just like a chain, like these people just moving these heavy desks and everything into the same building where Scott Wagner's at. And his new office mates upstairs and one floor up is this group called the Fairness Center. This is a nonprofit law firm that files lawsuits on behalf of disgruntled union members, public sector union members, and tries to bring pretty much like Janus-style union attacks to front and center. They are founded, pretty much set up by Matt Briere from the Commonwealth Foundation and Charles Mitchell from the Commonwealth Foundation. They are listed as the co-founders on this organization's 990 forms. And they are connected to the Koch brother money and all the other dark money groups that come along with it.
There you go. So did they have a little dumbwaiter system set up inside the buildings? Like, and just like screech, 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 like wheel stuff up and down from downstairs to upstairs.
But it's amazing. But it's amazing. Like the type of shit that goes on in Harrisburg that you would never think that would happen. This happened. It's like something out like a movie or something.
Well, I just can't believe this. Like, this just shows you what these people think. The fact that
they could do this like during the middle of a Saturday and no one's going to notice.
Like, I mean, walking, filing. Literally, as you said, like out of the manufacturing building,
desk, 40-inch computer monitors, chairs, cabinets, whatever. Out of the Manufacturer Association building, which is where all the Commonwealth Foundation shit is set up, on the third floor, across the street and over to the building on the other side of the street.
It's just remarkable.
They weren't even using like hand trucks.
I wish somebody just like set up shop with a video. Like, I wish there was somebody that just kind of just like took like unending footage of that. It would have been beautiful.
Yeah, I wish someone did that too, but they.
Yeah, I know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that would have been, and then just basically unending footage and then speed it up, right? And set it up to, like, you know, whatever, Ants Are Marching, like playing in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So
crazy, man. So there you got the Fairness Center kind of cozying right up to stock Scott Wagner, right in his camp, right above his campaign office, or in the same building
as. And you know they're not talking to each other.
Definitely not. I mean,
that would be in violation of like nonprofits and stuff, nonprofit laws and stuff like
definitely,
that.
Definitely. There wouldn't be any, I mean, there's
no collusion or anything like that.
No,
going on.
There's a strong kind of firewall, right? Or the fire floor, at least, between the two. And because there's definitely no discussions, there's definitely no in-kind kind of coordination that's going on there. There's definitely no kind of like, you know, people going from upstairs to downstairs or going out for coffee to each other to kind of talk about strategy and tactics. Nothing like that.
I mean, they don't look at each other when they pass each other in the hallway. There's no communication, nothing like that.
No, actually, I heard from what – if I remember what you told me actually was that they actually ordered like a whole caseload of those big horse blinders that they put on horses' eyes, and they're all required to wear them actually inside the building to ensure
– just stare straight down when they're walking.
Dude, it's the highest level of ethics that are going on in that building right there.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah, just saying.
They're just spewing ethics. It just oozes out of their skin.
Well, I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, just incredible. And, you know, again, look, this is why –
they're not even hiding it anymore.
No, that's what I mean. That's what I mean about just the kind of the brashness of it. Like how brazen is that, right? That you actually in the middle of the day walk your filing cabinets out of the building where the Commonwealth Foundation stuff is right over to Scott Wagner's building and you set up shop there. Like and not think twice about it because it's so normalized at this point.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy. Well, you know, and it's too bad too, because you know, and we have to kind of say a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of sadness here because one of the most kind of progressive voices of Central PA is dropping out of the race. Let's just take a little moment here, huh? Yeah?
Oh, how we hardly knew thee, Christina Hartman.
Christina Hartman, we're sorry to see you go. We are looking forward to
$360,000.
Yes.
Down the fucking drain.
Bye-bye. And from that what I understand, too, is, like, she basically, like, just didn't do any work. I didn't wonder why, like, her campaign didn't run itself or something.
Yeah. I think they had, like, a huge, like, petition signing party at someone's apartment the night before.
Yeah.
So I guess we got to talk about this. Basically, Christina Hartman handed in 89 valid signatures out of 1,000 to get on the Pennsylvania ballot. And she was challenged, and she dropped out before her case went to Commonwealth Court.
Right.
So she is not running for Congress out here anymore.
Oh, that was very, very well done. Very well done. So she is not running for Congress anymore. So those numbers are what? Just what the numbers are what again? 80 what?
89 out of 1,000.
89 out of 1,000 signatures were valid.
Yes.
Right.
That's like 89 hundredths of a percent, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Right. And then and you know, look, we should say, right, like it's not saying that there was like let's say like here is that doesn't necessarily mean it was intentionally fraudulent, right? But what it means is that there was no operation there at all.
Did you catch it, the Sam Cedar Majority Report, when I called in and talked about this?
No.
I called in.
What did you call this in?
A couple Wednesdays ago. Like the day, like 2 days after it happened.
Ugh.
And I was just like, I have an update about a race out where I'm living. And you're like, yeah, and I'm like, Christina Hartman. And he's like, Christina Hartman. And, you know, he starts talking about how she was a DCCC candidate. And I was like, yeah, well, she didn't get on the ballot. He was like, she was that incompetent. He's like, you wouldn't just start railing on the DCCC that being that incompetent, not getting on the ballot. You know, a little bit more insider baseball. She got kicked off the ballot by Brad Kaplinski, who was the campaign consultant who was hawking Donald Trump buttons at the Republican National Convention to pay his way through the Republican National Convention. And then the following week was arrested at the DNC. For stealing the press credentials for a Washington Post editor, causing a huge security breach, that's who knocked her off. Button boy.
Button boy. Button boy boots DNC or DCCC. Like
you got kicked off by, like, I mean, the political consultants, they're a class of their own.
You look at you, all diplomatic these days. It's pretty incredible. You've been practicing this stuff or something?
You have Smuckler out in Philadelphia. Right. You have Morrow. You have a bunch of, like, out there. Yeah, this is definitely, like, one of the stories. You got knocked off by, like, one of the worst fucking people to get knocked off by.
God, well, that's the state of it, right? Way to go, DCCC. Why did I go?
And, $360,000 she raised. Gone. Oh, yeah. Anyone know else where she moved to? Where
Please
she was living?
Tell.
She was living in an apartment complex that was a month-by-month lease. Yeah. $500 a month lofts. That was an old school building turned into these lofts for, like, the local Hershey Bears and Washington or Harrisburg Senators players. Pretty much like people passing through the city.
Yeah, I totally buy that. I totally buy that Christina Hartman was, like, you know, totally fine with slumming it in, like, in a, like in a converted schoolhouse. That doesn't kind of seem like her
style. Do you think she was staying there?
Hell no.
Wait, you mean you don't think she was staying there a couple nights a week?
No, from what I understand, it was not exactly the crowd that she ran with, Sean. Just saying. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm totally not surprised she got knocked off the ballot.
No. Well, there you go. Now, I think this is actually one of the key stories, I think, this week. I thought you breaking this story, I thought was something else. I mean, you kind of pushing this out, kind of following this through, showed you. I mean, yes, it's a little bit kind of insider about some of the
dirty tricks.
Yeah, exactly.
Skullduggery that's going on.
But, I mean, it raises a whole lot of questions. So kind of walk us through this whole kind of what's just happening in the PA 7th.
So you have three frontrunners, pretty much, who are making headways. John Morganelli, who is the self-proclaimed favorite because everyone knows who he is, that being the district attorney out in the Allentown area. You have Greg Edwards, who's the progressive activist, reverend pastor who is running, who has all the support of the national groups, has support of the SEIU. Then you have Susan Wild, the former city solicitor, all running for the 7th Congressional District. And Monday night, there was a push poll that was conducted in the exurbs and the suburbs of Allen of the 7th Congressional District. And pretty much they asked, asking impressions of these people, Greg Edwards, Tom Wolf, John Morganelli, Donald Trump, and Susan Wild. And you never heard John Morganelli's name for the rest of the thing, conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
You heard questions about one of the questions was if you had any doubts about Sirius or no doubts about someone. And one of the ones was, Greg Edwards would like to expand the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include sexual orientation and gender identity, meaning that business owners would have to provide services like a same-sex wedding cake, even if they have strong religious or ethical objections. Now, someone in the 7th Congressional District is poll testing these messages with people.
Right.
To see if it's good to run on. And people from the Morganelli campaign were not happy that they got called out on this. Because when I was talking to a couple of people, as this was going on, there was also a robocall going around in favor of John Morganelli at the very same time in the district.
Coincidence? I don't know.
Another one was in 2003, Susan Wild compared Americans celebrating the death of Saddam Hussein to Islamic extremists who celebrated September 11th. Well, yeah, you know, we all knew how that turned out in Iraq.
Pretty crazy.
Let's see.
You got to talk about the South Africa one.
Yeah, so here we go. I was looking for that one. Greg Edwards has compared Pennsylvania's education funding system to South African apartheid. A group he directs often wears masks to school board meetings and disrupts them. Do you have any doubts about him after that? I mean, this is the type of shit they were poll testing on. And last night on Twitter, someone got in contact with me from the Edwards camp, or no, not the Edwards campaign, the Morganelli campaign, who I did not know was from the Morganelli campaign. I said, like, listen, only one of two things happened here. Either this is a Republican group trying to get Morganelli, trying to kneecap Morganelli, or this was actually Morganelli himself. And someone said, Morganelli's not running on this shit. We had a long 2-hour conversation, and that turned into him blocking me on Twitter. So one of the conversations, his campaign manager, well, it's like, you should come over here to the Lehigh Valley and come see what the demographics are really like where you're from. This ain't some Philadelphia liberal town. This ain't like the Philadelphia liberal oasis or whatever. Like, and kept on saying, do you know what the demographics are like? And I'm like,
I told you.
They're changing.
Yeah, I told you. It's a brand new word that he learned for this campaign. So he's going to keep on saying it because he thinks it means something.
It's code for white.
No, that's what he's talking about, right? He's talking about kind of particular
areas. And we called him out on that bullshit right away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, this is a kind of key thing. You see this kind of insider playing, but this is like, you know, again, this is showing you kind of part of what's going on. Now, again, we don't have evidence that this came directly from the Morganelli campaign. It could very well be an outside group. It could be a Republican group. We don't know exactly, but it is interesting. Right. That at the very least that Morganelli was kind of not seen as part of the targeting there. So either somebody is trying to get Morganelli out in front because they like his politics, his right wing politics. Yes, he's a Democrat, but he's like anti-immigrant.
And he's also openly praised working with Lou Barletta and Kris Kobach.
And Pat Toomey.
But Lou Barletta and Kris Kobach, probably the two most extreme people on the federal level with the immigration and undocumented immigration stuff. And basically, he has a bunch of tweets out there saying, you know, if you had an undocumented immigrant, if you had an undocumented immigrant, they're actually illegal. Would you call a thief walking in your house an unwelcome guest? I mean, he's worked with Kris Kobach, who tried to find what, like 100 million unregistered voters,
right,
illegal immigrant voters this time around. You know, these are the people he was stumping to Trump to try to get a transition job.
Yep. Crazy, crazy. So we're going to continue to follow that one. Hopefully we're going to see some stuff breaking on that soon as well. Couple things we want to kind of run through pretty quickly here is kind of updates. Number one, today at Westchester University of Pennsylvania, you had a rally for tuition-free higher education or affordable education. Kind of some of the rallies that we're seeing kind of popping up across the state and being organized across the state, basically in support of this the PA Promise legislation. Or it's not legislation yet. We hear that it's on its way to be introduced in the coming weeks.
Free public higher education from Vincent Hughes.
Right, exactly. So from Hughes should be kind of introducing that. And we saw these rallies here. So it was kind of pretty great turnout. And it was awesome to see that. I have to give, you know, a shout out to my friend Seth Condon at Westchester University at the end of the rally. And we're going to post a link to the video of the speakers, at least, at the rally. Kind of towards the end of the rally, he gets back up on the mic and gives a huge shout out to the PA Student Power Network for basically being the ones who have really created the momentum from this over their advocacy over the past year and a half. I mean, we've been following the PA Student Power Network from the beginning. You know, these are folks that have stayed with it ever since they first got organized ahead of the 2016 election. They helped out and kind of like organized independently with the ABSCUS first ever strike. And they've just continued to build, build capacity and build power. And here's one of the fruits of their labors. Like now this issue is on the front burners, which is pretty amazing.
It's amazing to see how far this issue has come in the past 3 years.
Yep.
3 years ago, we were talking completely ripping Anthony Green or not Anthony Williams' head off.
Yeah, remember that?
proposing legislation to set up a lottery system for people who have student debt and, you know, kids going to college to play this like lottery system like the Pennsylvania lottery and to try and get winnings to unload their debt.
Get your golden ticket.
Yes. And we've come a long way from that stupid, absurd fucking idea to someone actually getting behind the free public higher education in Pennsylvania. And also, I guarantee you, from Vincent Hughes' thing, this is a direct response to Senator Scott Wagner saying that we should privatize all 14 public higher education institutions and telling the chancellor and telling the administration that you're done as an institution. That happened, Vincent Hughes lost his mind and said what we should be having is a free higher education for all. And this is what an opportunity of free higher education for all. And this is a true alternative. This isn't some half step that Democrats are used to taking.
Yes.
Like, this is proposing a true alternative to Scott Wagner's plan to privatize the 14 public higher education institutions in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. And people, you recall, a couple of weeks back, we played some of the audio of that, Vincent Hughes, and the back and forth between Wagner and Vincent Hughes. And he's taking the gloves off at this point, is willing to kind of get behind this. And, you know, it's actually good to see some of these kind of more progressive Democrats actually, you know, catch the winds in the sails of organization going on.
And I have a fun story about Hughes. A couple weeks ago, I was in a press conference with the governor's office. I had my Pennsylvania Student Power Network shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Hughes came up to me. He's like, yo, man, where can I get one of those shirts? He's like, yo, my man. He's like, where'd you get that shirt at? He's like, I need one of them. Like, in his total, like, Vincent Hughes's way. And he's just like, yo, I need one of those shirts. And I'm like, hey, I can hook you up with the person.
Yeah, we definitely got to make sure he gets one.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm friends with the organizer. You know, he knows what we do. That's Sean Kitchen, Raging Chicken Press. He's like, oh, yes, I absolutely know who you are. He's like, I want one of those shirts. Where can I get it?
That's awesome.
He's like, so we have to make that exchange set up.
Exactly. Well, and also, so we've got you got the advocacy around the tuition-free college. You also have, you know, as I mentioned in the intro today, PA Student Power Network has also called for a statewide day of action on every campus across the state to denounce and deny school funding to hate groups. This is a student, and that is for Monday, April 9th. They're calling for this day of action because IUP, the Indiana University of Pennsylvania, on Monday, supposedly, Turning Point USA, this is that, you know, again, right-wing, dark money group headed by this guy, Charlie Kirk, were attempting to basically infiltrate college campuses with kind of right-wing, right-wing front group, basically billionaire-backed extremist front group to basically infiltrate college campuses, student government, and things like this. They're holding this event there, and PA Student Power Network, once again, is out in front pushing back, and they're calling for the days of action.
Yes, and Turning Point USA is going to be featured at the Crazy Fest this week.
Hey.
That conveniently is sponsored by Scott Wagner Commonwealth Foundation and Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania. So the Commonwealth Foundation, Scott Wagner, and the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, the three main factors trying to go after unions in Pennsylvania, trying to turn Pennsylvania to a right-to-work state, are bringing the alt-right to speak here. And I guarantee you this is coordinated because of the conference is on Saturday and this big event is going to be on Monday. So the scheduling works out pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. Not as if that's coordinated at all too as well. So there you have it. You guys got to check out the PA Leadership Conference, the Crazy Fest, which Sean was talking about there over in Camp Hill. We're going to put a link to their conference site just so you can kind of see what we're talking about. Because it is a who's who here in Pennsylvania. And I'm always surprised that it doesn't get more, spotlights put on it, because it is really the crazy circus coming to town of the far right. Okay. One thing I just want to mention, I want to come back to this next week because, as you know, I'm looking at the clock right now. And frankly, to be honest with everybody, I got to go pick up my car before 9 o'clock tonight. So I'm kind of like checking at the time. And I don't want to give this story short shrift, but let me say this. I'll do a quick version of this. I don't know if people saw this at all. Edinburgh University, that is kind of out by Erie, Pennsylvania, kind of in the northwest corner of the state. The president of that university would basically resign last week. And this is after he's a kind of former military guy, came in and said he's going to restructure the university, right? He said he wanted to restructure the university's DNA and stuff. And he got a whole bunch of hot water when he basically came out and, you know, basically wanted to cut all these programs. And Edinburgh has been kind of like nonstop at the front lines of getting just like hammered in terms of retrenchment, program cuts, and so on. And there was a student there who was basically a music performance major who was basically advocating to kind of save his program, the music performance major, to save the program. And this guy, his name is Walker, right? President Walker. What was his first name? Fred Walker basically came out and said, according to an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, he said that the music performance major who tried to save the program, you know, through this online petitioning and advocacy and things like this, he actually did it not because he cared about his major or was actually kind of, you know, cared about the issue, but because he was grieving a death in his family, and he was looking for a distraction. right? Well, that was enough to basically open the floodgates of outrage. And this guy had built up a whole bunch of stuff before. But the story I want to tell, I mean, we'll come back to this next week. The story I want to tell more about this, to get this more in depth, is this was such a great case study in what, you know, that direct action gets the goods. Right, that a guy was basically sitting there and saying that he's going to gut this university and no one can stop him, till he finally had to put his tail between his legs and go whining and whimpering away, basically saying, I knew I was never going to be able to reason with the faculty and the students, so I just have to go, forget it. Right, took his ball and ran home. So thank goodness. So kudos to those students and those faculty members who organized out there and could have forced out this president that just wanted to do nothing but gut the university. But we're going to come back to that story a little bit bit next week, and hopefully I'm hoping to get do an Out the Coop extra with an interview with some of those folks, so we get to hear a little bit more about it. All right, last thing I got to say for this segment before we go to our last call, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I want to kind of give you some updates. If you have not seen this, so Colleen Bradley case, I want to remind everybody, Colleen Bradley was the former director of budget and financial planning at Westchester University from 2011 to 2014. She was basically the person, right? So she was like, you know, high-level manager, administrator, came in to basically help with the kind of restructuring of their budget and all this stuff. And in less than a year, she basically uncovered, which basically something bordered on fraud, right? I don't know if we can legally call it fraud, what was going on there, but the very less unethical, deceitful budgeting practices that were used to basically say to politicians, to faculty, and to students that we are out of money. There's a huge budget crisis. The sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And what she found in her first year at Westchester University, that the university was sitting on a surplus of $18.1 million. But then she was ordered by the state system of higher education, by the directors of state system of higher education at that point, basically saying, no, 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 you cannot show your surplus. You have to show a deficit. So that she was told to just plug numbers in so that they would basically turn out to show a deficit. So then they could show faculty that they needed to cut programs, students that they needed to raise tuition and fees, and politicians that, look, we don't have enough money, we need more, right? So in my book, this is nothing but fraud, right? I'm not a lawyer, but I look at this and this was overt fraud. And this is something that I have been following and reporting on since Raging Chicken Press started. So anyhow, we released the first video, my first interview, first segment, part one of Colleen Bradley Whistleblower, that is out on YouTube. We've been circling it on social media. There'll also be a link in the show notes of this today. This is a critical case. So that's injustice number one for the Colleen Bradley case, has to do with the fact that there has been no reckoning for those people who have been who defrauding the public, if you ask me, right? And these practices, what they were doing then, that she exposed back in 2014 and 2012, when she exposed that stuff, these practices continue today. Right. And there's been no justice on that. So that's only part one. Part two is that she filed a whistleblower case because she was fired for exposing this stuff. She was fired for making it public and letting other people know about this. And she was fired. And now so she filed a whistleblower case. And it's turned out to be just this incredible journey. Her lawyers basically walked in and said, look, this is a cut and dry case. This is a slam dunk. It's clearly the fact that her First Amendment rights were violated as a whistleblower. She's guaranteed whistleblower protection because she was a governmental employee, right? She was guaranteed and blowing the whistle on it. She should have been given the highest level of whistleblower protection, First Amendment right protection, right? And the lower court, the initial court, basically found that that's exactly what happened. Right. They even have a deposition from her boss, Mark Mixner, coming out and basically saying, hey, look, yes, this was not part of her job. So whatever. So they thought this was a slam dunk. Now, a whole bunch of weird stuff happened. So it went to the U.S. District Court, the Eastern District Court of Pennsylvania. Right. So this is going to be in the federal system that goes to there. And they basically ignore what the lower court said about the violation of her First Amendment rights. Right. They basically do not give her this special credit. Basically, you're having a summary judgment, a particular legal term I won't get into all now. But basically, they were supposed to give her basically the benefit of the doubt. So this case could go forward to a jury. They said no. right? Now, this is why this matters to anybody who's listening to this. Because her case right now, they have 90 days to file what's called a writ of certiorari. I'm going to mispronounce that bad. But basically, it's appealed directly to the U.S. Supreme Court, basically saying, look, we think the lower courts erred in how they treated the suit. And because it's the kind of case that it can potentially set precedent for whistleblower protection across the country, that the U.S. Supreme Court needs to order a kind of re-argument or kind of for this to go to trial. And this is their last attempt. Now, what happens if basically the Supreme Court does not want to see this and they want to actually let the lower court decision stand? This is going to so dramatically narrow the rights of whistleblowers in the public sector. Impact of about, 30 million employees across the country, and dramatically limit whistleblower protection for those employees. This is a huge case. And so this is why I'm spending the time learning how to edit videos and produce this stuff together to help tell this story. So I want you to please check out this stuff, check out the video, and share it with every single network that you've got, because we need to get some eyes on this case, right? What we're also looking for, for anybody who's listening to this, who kind of works in a legal profession, things like this, I'm reaching out to a whole bunch of folks that want to follow up on this. We could use some folks there too as well. But we want to kind of start to push this out into a kind of a national spotlight. So we're looking to kind of like, yes, we're going to do our work here at Raging Chicken, but then also connect and get the story picked up on a broader scale, because the implications are huge. So you've got two injustices in one case. One has to be about a defrauding on budget. The other one has the potential of setting national precedent when it comes to whistleblower cases. If you want to know more about this right now, go listen or go watch the video of my interview with Colleen Bradley. Listen to our podcast, our last Out to Coop Extra, where I interviewed Colleen Bradley and one of her lawyers, Dan Kearney. So you can get up to speed on some of this, on what's happening in this case. The next round of video should be released hopefully within the next few days, if not next week, which we're going to get more from Colleen Bradley about the decision to file the whistleblower case and interviews with her lawyers about some of the issues that are at stake here. So I just want to put that on everybody's radar, because I can't underscore enough about how important this is, especially since, number one, these kind of fraudulent budgeting practices continue in the state system of higher education across the state of Pennsylvania. And we're going to potentially see a gutting of whistleblower rights nationally, right? So this is not something that is just about Kevin likes budgets, right? Kevin likes numbers. This is all about kind of saying, like, we need to kind of like expose this for here. And yes, do I have a personal investment in this? Absolutely. I've been covering this kind of stuff since Raging Chicken Press started. And I'll tell you, one of the most frustrating things in the world is that when faculty say it, when unions say it, when Raging Chicken says it, when people are kind of exposing this stuff, nobody pays attention, and they think that you're just self-interested. Why this case potentially could catch fire: Colleen Bradley was a kind of top-level administrator who decided to blow the whistle, and she lost everything, right? So watch this case, watch the video, listen to the podcast, and stay tuned to Raging Chicken Press for further developments in this story. So that's my fire for the day, Sean. Yeah. So listen, we're going to come right back after this brief message. I'll do a touchstone for last call real quick, and then I got to go get my car. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this quick break.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 6 years, we've brought unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive, independent media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting, investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new, sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. After the Trump election, we dug in even deeper. Thanks to some longtime members, one-time donations, and a shift in other resources, we brought on more writers and started paying them. Now we're doubling down and want to expand our infrastructure and pay our writers even more. We need to invest in our media if we have a chance to resist the unprecedented assault on democracy, working families, women's rights, and our planet. History will remember the choices we make today. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a local craft beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight.
Oh.
Please.
That's going into the final copy, Sean. Welcome back. This is Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. Let's go. Oh, God, Sean. Sean
just gave please tell me you didn't get that.
The lead into the last call, Sean decides to burp.
Well, I am enjoying. I decided, you know, drinking some more lighter beer this past week.
Yeah, you told all of Facebook that, right?
Yeah. So I picked up a 15-pack of Founders Solid Gold Premium Lager. It's actually a really good German-style lager. Comes in at 4%. Definitely recommend picking that up. Comes in a nice little classic can.
A classic can. It's very pretty. It's a pretty can, Sean. It's a pretty can, Sean.
It is. It's awesome. Well, it's a nice cream-colored can with blue stripes along the side.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to save my imbibing for a little bit later after I get back with my car. So
I'm about to head over to the bar across the street from me right now. I just got a message on my phone from the Untappd app that the Midtown Tavern put Deuce Juicy on, which is Deuce Juicy is the Juice Juicy from Evergreen, double IPA.
Well, there you go. How good is that? Well, I just want to give a quick shout out. While I was up in Utica, New York over Easter for a very brief stay, it was a huge turnaround. My kids and I went to go see my folks. Very quick turnaround. Number one, I had left some beer up there when we were there last summer that I just forgot. So that was sitting there. And then I got a chance to stop at this place. It's called Marcy Discount Beverages. It's a, you know, it's a place that when I was growing up, you know, it was like the beverage place. It was like a place you go get cases
of beer.
It's
where all the 14-year-olds got their Jenny-ite.
It's actually where you went to get your grape soda, man. It was awesome grape soda there. Like, we used to go before, they get all the kids in the car, like, neighbors and everything. We'd go stop at Marcy Discount Beverage on the way out of town to get, like, you know, mixed cases of a really kind of, like, super sweet soda and stuff like that. But this place, over the years, especially with the explosion of craft brewing, is just – it's an amazing distributor. The guys who work there do an amazing job. They have a tap room there now, too, as well. They do amazing job. And so every time I'm up there, I stop there and just get mixed stuff, the stuff that I can't get normally. But the one thing that that I was able to pick up was this was a 2017 where did I do with it here? It's basically a 2017 bourbon barrel aged Dragon Slayer. This is from Middle Ages Brewery in Syracuse. It's actually one of the ones that I picked up last time and left up there. So it's been sitting since the summer. And I saved it. And my goal was once I got the first video edited, right, around the Colleen Bradley case, I was going to open that thing. And I opened it. Oh, my God, that thing was fantastic. It was a Russian Imperial Stout. Comes in at 11.7, right? So you can see why I was saving it for a special occasion. But absolutely delicious. And it's one of my favorites up there in Syracuse, Middle Ages Brewery. So if you're up there, check it out. And if you are, for whatever reason that would bring you to Utica, New York, right, if you're looking for a cool place to stop, stop at Marcy Discount Beverages. You can look it up. They got a great webpage. Marcy Discount Beverages, tell them Raging Chicken Press sent you, and pick up some things. You could even get some kind of like craft Canadian stuff there too as well, since you're kind of closer to the Canadian border. But that's it. So anything else that you got kind of cooking on your end, Sean?
Villanova won the championship.
Oh,
did you watch the game?
For what? What championship?
NCAA basketball.
That's right. March Madness is over. I forgot to even ask you about that because I figured when I saw the game, I was like, oh, Sean's got to be going nuts.
I can't believe that kid just came in and just started shooting the lights out.
Well, you have it, man.
Yeah.
Put on a show. I guess go Nova for all you Nova fans out there. So cool.
Yep.
All right, folks. Yeah, well,
you know who's leading the ceremony today at the Nova Parade in Philadelphia?
Do tell.
Mike Stack.
Oh, my God. My God. Did he have his Scooby-Doo socks on or whatever it was?
Pink Panther.
Pink Panther. Right.
That must it matched have been. His makeup.
Oh, God, and his stylist. So, anyways, whatever. Low blow to end last call for the day. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Hate to cut this so short, folks, but I've got, you know, cars to pick up, no people to see, really, really no places to go. Just got to get my car. All right, so we will talk to you again next week here at Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. I want to remind you, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress, become a member for as little as $5 a month. We need your support now more than ever, as we dig in and kind of broaden out our work at Raging Chicken. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. It's been great to be back, and now we head off to a weekend, they're saying, potentially of snow. Insane. All right, we'll talk next week, folks. See ya!